Now, President Trump's low approval ratings have given hope to many Democrats about the upcoming midterm elections. Hopes are high for a wave election, with Democrats regaining one or possibly both chambers of Congress, despite a somewhat challenging landscape in the Senate. Joe Camerano, what do you expect? And are Democrats being a little too optimistic at this stage?
Well, I think everybody's being too optimistic and too pessimistic right now. Look, the reality is off your elections, there's usually a decline in support for the president's party. On the aggregate level, the best predictor of the vote is presidential popularity and the economy. His popularity is down. The economy is doing well. It has been doing well for a while. And so usually the president will lose seats. We have to remember, Trump didn't win many seats in the House. I don't know if he won seats in the House. He may have lost a couple. And I think he lost a couple in the Senate as well, or one in the Senate last time around. So there was no surge. And so the decline is likely to be a steeper decline than we might normally see. Will it be like 2010? I'm not so sure yet.
Lisa Pelosi, how do you see the outlook for the midterm elections?
I think it's still a little too early to call it right now because things are rapidly changing. But to go back to the year in review and we look at what Trump has been able to accomplish, he has been able to accomplish a few of the things that he wants to do. Trying to figure out in the next few months what's going to happen. Will we go to war with North Korea? Will something catastrophic, will there be terrorism on our shores? We don't know what could happen. You're right. Traditionally, in an off year, the opposite party is energized. They want to come out. So the voters who feel that they really want to make change, they'll come out. A lot of the seats that are being defended in areas where Trump won. What kind of quality candidates will the Republicans bring forward? In that same case, what quality Democrats will bring forward? I still think it's too early. There's so much more that has to happen before we're really going to get a full sense of what next year will November will be.
Gabriela Domenzon, what's in your crystal ball?
I think it depends a lot on the political parties, on the Democratic Party, actually. I was President Obama's spokesperson in 2012 and designed his Latino vote strategy. And as you know, we increased Latino voter turnout and arguably got him the presidency. But since then, the kind of work that we did to reach disaffected voters, minority voters, African Americans, immigrants, Latinos, has dropped. I mean, the fact that Hillary Clinton, you know, in a Trump election, didn't raise the Latino vote is significant of that. So I'm hopeful. What we're seeing in the Senate right now is Democrats finally leaning in to what defines us as a country, which is immigration, by saying that they're willing to shut down the government over this DACA fight. That's something that folks that have been fighting for human and immigrant rights like me for such a long time have been wanting to see the Democratic Party do. But it depends about on the ground. I mean, Devin can tell you, if you don't knock those doors, if you don't rebind those people and put the money into that, people aren't going to turn out.
Brandon Bell, are you worried Democrats are going to retake the House?
That's always a concern for the first midterm. You know, 2010 was a huge example of that. You know, what Lisa said, 25 out of 33 of the Senate seats that are up, you know, are Republicans defending. I know there's a couple people who are retiring. 10 Trump states, overwhelming Trump states, such as West Virginia, where he won by 30 or 40 points, probably. So I think that you don't know. It's too early. You know, I don't know that the Democrats are organized. I actually agree with Gabriela, you know, on that. I'm not so sure that they're organized. And money-wise, what I could tell you that's public is that the Republican National Committee is in no debt and has a ton of money cash on hand, like as in probably $50 million cash on hand, whereas the Democrats have $6 million cash on hand with a lot of debt. I'm not really sure if this resistance is working if they're not raising money. And, you know, I could say a lot about the resistance and the organization or lack thereof, but I'm not so sure from the first woman's march on January 21st to almost 1 year to the day later that we're seeing any real organization within that community.
Devin Driscoll, have Democrats learned their lesson from 2016?
Well, I hope that the other Republican chairman, Chair, you're being unsure about whether they're engaged or not, because they're going to find out in November that they are. It is, I was speaking with Secretary of State Nelly Gorbet today, and something she said to me was an articulation of something I'd been looking for, which is I feel like the resistance is now morphing into the watchword no longer is resist, but engage. And we're seeing it in Minnesota, where I live. We're seeing it in Oregon, where my family lives. And we're seeing it here in Rhode Island and across the country of excellent candidate recruitment, which is a critical part of any wave election. You're seeing, you know, really engaged operatives, folks who worked in 2016, who saw their hopes dashed and who have said, this is not going to happen to me again. And I think you see a national conversation that is engaging on critical questions that people want to see in 2018. One of the mistakes we made in 2010 was not reading enough into things like the election in Massachusetts. And we sort of, Democrats said, oh, you know, that was an aberration. It was a short, it wasn't a great candidate. It was a short window. And I think Republicans do so at their peril to read into Virginia and New Jersey and some of these special elections in my neighboring Wisconsin, where districts that went overwhelmingly for the president in special elections, which usually is going to favor the party that usually does well there, actually flipping. Mm-hmm. You know, West Virginia did go strongly for the president, but so did Alabama. And we have a Democratic senator from Alabama.
Wisconsin.
So I would argue about the candidate we fielded, but yeah.
And so I think but if we see if resist continues to morph into engage, I do believe that the president and the president's party are in for a rough time this coming November.
Well, despite all the controversy associated with President Trump, there is a government in Washington. There is a Supreme Court where he's already made one pick. He's got some controversial cabinet secretaries like Scott Pruitt at EPA, Betsy DeVos at Education. Providence College political science professor Joe Camerano, what is your perspective on how the people in Trump's government will change America after 4 years?
See, this is, I think, the story most of us are missing. Trump, by nature, is a delegator. When was the last time he actually managed one of his big real estate projects? Probably over a decade ago. He hands things off to other people so that he can do what he wants to do, and that's get attention. And so what we're seeing is these cabinet-level secretaries or equivalents like Scott Pruitt at EPA have enormous discretion. And unfortunately, the presidency has evolved into this sort of unilateral action office where executive orders, executive memos, executive actions are done instead of trying to get Congress to act, because Congress increasingly isn't acting. And what's happening is these people are paying attention to their issue, and there's enormous change happening, enormous impact going on, and probably well beyond any legitimate claim of mandate, particularly on areas of education, the environment, and I would argue justice.
State Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, what kind of collective impact do you expect from Trump's cabinet and the kind of people he's putting into judicial robes over time?
Well, you know, starting with the judicial robes, he's, I think, done a spectacular job in nominating people and being successful with those nominations. Of course, there were a couple hiccups there. A couple of the trial courts, you know, with one guy who was, just had no experience. But Neil Gorsuch was a huge victory. It can't be understated. Neil Gorsuch could have an impact on what happened today with Gina Raimondo's proposed budget for sports betting. You know, you're talking about conservative justices that look as though five of them will likely vote to allow sports betting and could close our budget deficit here in Rhode Island.
In a case brought by the Republican governor of New Jersey.
Of New Jersey, that's right. And another thing that Governor Raimondo could thank President Trump for. But, you know, what it really boils down to is at the end of the day, I think he surrounded himself with some really good people. You could say Scott Pruitt is controversial. Nikki Haley very well may be the president of the United States one of these days. I think she's doing a really great job at the UN. And I think there are a ton of other examples. General Kelly as HHS secretary and now as chief of staff. Spectacular. He's got great reviews. Gets along with across the aisle with folks. General Mattis, McMaster, and so the delegating that Joe was talking about needs to flow a little bit better, maybe. And maybe the first year was a little experimental in that, and hopefully he could do a better job at delegating to these folks.
Gabriela Domenzon, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I expect that you see things a little bit differently from State Republican Chairman Brandon Bell. What are your top concerns about what affects Trump's government will have over time?
I just wish I was as optimistic as you about this person. I really, really do. I don't want to dislike the president. It's just that everything he does and says, I find personally and goes against completely all the values that make this country what it is and why my parents came here. As far as your question, Republicans and President Trump are going to have a lasting impact on this country. They're extremely efficient. Obviously, Mitch McConnell withheld the Supreme Court nomination that was President Obama's until after the election so that the Republican, if he were to win, was to appoint somebody that was successful. All of the lower courts are being replaced by super, super conservative judges. And I think that the country's going to be worse off for it, but as far as a success for the Republicans, absolutely.
Republican activist Lisa Pelosi, how about that? Was that a foul play when Republicans blocked Merrick Garland's nomination to the Supreme Court?
Maybe.
Yes.
Yes. Maybe. But then in the end,
it's smart for you guys. You guys know how to, maneuver it.
That's the whole thing. If Hillary Clinton had won, I thought that I would not say the name tonight. I'm sorry, I'm the first one to say it. But had Hillary Clinton won, things would be different.
Democrats have never done that to a Republican.
When Justice Scalia died, it was really no different than what happened when George W. Bush was looking to get...
his personal attorney?
No, it wasn't his personal attorney. Actually, I'm drawing a blank right now.
This is Harriet Myers?
Okay, that's State Republican Chairman Brandon Bell. And let's go back to Lisa Pelosi on the impact over time of President Trump's judicial picks and his administrators.
So let me just start off by saying, to the victor comes the spoil. So when you become president, this is what happens. You get to choose judges. You get to choose your cabinet secretaries. You get to choose your agenda for the country to go forward. And what we've seen is there's always a pendulum going on. So the pendulum of George Bush created the Barack Obama. And because of Barack Obama, we have Donald Trump. Yes, we do. Because we have a Senator Barack Obama, who became president, wanted to unite the country. Instead, the country was polarized. And that allowed Donald Trump to be able to come forward and become a voice for people who felt that they were being overlooked during the 8 years of President Obama. So that's why we have Donald Trump.
Democratic operative Devin Bristol is...
I'm sorry, I just had a stroke.
Is Lisa Pelosi right that this all comes out in the wash over
no,
time?
No, she's not right. With all due respect, she's absolutely not right. There is no question that Donald Trump is a symptom of a sick society. The polarization that we feel right now... where we are unable to have conversations across dinner tables, let alone across the aisle, that is troubling, and it is a mark of something wrong that all of us have to recommit ourselves to making better.
But to suggest
that Barack Obama is the root cause of that sickness is so far from correct. I'm sorry for hemming and hawing over here, but it's too much to bear because President Obama's presidency was marked by an intransigent Congress, a Senate Majority Leader in Mitch McConnell who vowed not to make him a one-term president. Right? You can't. How can you come together and lead the country when the opposition party, a leader in the opposition party, is saying that is their goal on day one? So, to the victor go the spoils. Absolutely. Well, the president gets to select. The president is vested with the power to select judges and others. Let me say this again. Barack Obama was president when Justice Scalia died.
Yep.
And so if we're victoring and spoiling, that is why I think there are differences to be talked about here with Justice Gorsuch and then the broader changing of the courts.
Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, what do you say to Devin's comment that it was an intransigent Republican Congress that blocked a lot of President Obama's agenda?
I don't know if he said agenda or if you were just referring to the judicial, Merrick
broader
Garland
agenda.
And
broader
the broader agenda. So President Obama should have done a better job of, getting Democrats elected. I mean, it's really that simple. 2010, okay, that was the first midterm. I hope we don't have the same similar in 2018 to what he faced. But in 2012, 14, and 16, I mean, that's for him to be blamed for. The Merrick Garland thing, I have my own opinion. It's way too long for this. But what I would say is that it was in the last year of his presidency that that we all knew there was no way that he could do another term. He was a lame duck. And, Justice Scalia tragically died. To the victor goes the spoils. I mean, it really is that. There's no other way to really...
Let me stop you there. Professor Joe Camerano, there was polarization under President Obama. There's polarization now. What would it take for us as a nation to move beyond it? Or is this just the way it's going to be?
Well, I think what it's going to take is for us, those of us who are here, those of us who vote, those of us who are citizens and don't take our citizenship responsibly, to change that behavior. I was looking up on my smartphone the quote from Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in the stars, it's in ourselves." And the reason they were able to get away with what I think was a constitutionally dubious argument about holding up the nomination has a lot to do with the way we vote.
Let me stop you there. And Gabriela Domensen, last word on this to you. How do we as a nation move past this kind of deep political polarization?
I mean, I think for me personally, and I know for a lot of my friends, it, first of all, it's sitting with the discomfort this is creating, right? When he calls immigrants from Africa or from Haiti or from El Salvador the word that you said that I won't say, it's really, really coming to terms with the fact that we have a nativist, racist president.
How do we move?
Sitting with the discomfort
but
of
Donald
it.
Trump's not always going to be president. How does the nation move beyond this polarization that seems more constant?
Empathy, right? Mm. Empathy with your neighbor, with your friends, starting to think of people as actual people and not as enemies, and understanding where people are coming from.
All right, that's a good note to end on. We're almost out of time. Before we go, I'd like to thank some people who helped make this discussion happen. Maddie Parmenter, the technical staff, and everyone at Providence College. Rhode Island Public Radio General Manager Tori Malatia, News Director Elizabeth Harrison, Chief Engineer Aaron Reed, Operations and Productions Manager James Baumgartner, and we couldn't have done it without our all-star panel, Democratic operative and law student Devin Driscoll, Rhode Island Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, Gabriela Domensen from the Latino Political Institute at Roger Williams University, Republican analyst Lisa Pelosi, and Providence College Professor Joe Camerano, forgive me. I'm Ian Donis. Please give our panel a hand.